save big money on every...
Make sure you have something to talk about over the holidays with your weird uncle.
Get to the point, weirdo.
All the sports info you need is right here.
On The Game, 7:30 a.m.
On the go from the Driven Collision Studios, even Brock didn't recognize the guest who stopped by because he's visiting in Michigan from his home in Wisconsin.
I thought he was a prize winner.
No.
Just saying hi, which happens once in a great while.
His prize is to come in and say hi. Bob Kurtz has had a long career in broadcasting Major League Baseball, NHL hockey out of both Boston and Minnesota. But if you're in my generation, very few of you probably remember that he was my predecessor on the sports at 6 and 11 o'clock on WJIM-TV, which went to the spring of 1971. And then, thankfully, he got into a little rift with the management, and so that didn't last, although it was a break for you because you went to Major League Sports from there. And I said that I'd do it for free and or for nothing, and if he didn't like it, they could get rid of me. And those were that was music to his ears.
I was doing it for next to nothing.
How long had you done the 6 and 11 o'clock sports? Blaha was there with us. Blaha was there with us. Blaha and I were doing radio news at the old WGIM radios right over
there. That's what I was hearing when I was coming in on the car. This is not where the old WVIC was, though, is it?
No, that's over on Mount Hope Avenue. I don't know what it is today.
That's what used to be 7:30 right on the AM dial. We had Bob Sherman and they had Chris McClure along with Blaha.
And Bob Sherman, who most people don't remember just because they're not in our generation, he had as good a voice for on the air as ever came out of the market here, in my opinion.
And they used to do that long pregame show before Michigan State football. I think he started when the coach came downstairs for breakfast about 6:30 in the morning.
Well, you'll remember back in the 1970s, the way football was broadcast on Michigan State radio was any station could have its own announcers. They had all those 22 booths across the top of the state. Everybody got one. And I claim Hal Gross at WJ, the only reason we did it is so he could sit up there with his buddies up in a suite or a booth. And we did the game with him sitting behind us.
And I think all that went into Fred Stabley's budget, which helped me at Michigan State because Fred was the longtime sports information director and wanted to start out broadcasting the hockey games on the road. So we drew out of that fund to fund my adventures on the road with the Michigan State hockey team.
So Bob,
I heard you talking about AMO earlier.
Yeah.
We used to whistle between line changes.
How many years were you working in this market?
I worked... finally got a job at JIM in 1969, and then I left around 1980.
Because Blaha and I were doing radio news there, and said George never did television. He never did. And I was radio news, and remember Dennis Wayne was our weatherman. Well-known in the market.
Howard Lancor.
Great guy. Those guys couldn't have treated me any. I mean, I'm just a 21-whatever-it-was-year-old, and I remember... They wanted to get Dennis off the 11 o'clock television weather because he was doing a morning shift on radio on WJIM AM. So they didn't want him working a long day. And so they needed an 11 o'clock weather. I told Brock this, but I told you this. So I went over there and I said, since I'm here at night doing the radio news, I'll just do the TV weather and it won't cost you a dime. Music to his ears. So he said, do you know anything about weather? Oh, are you kidding me? So it's a true story. They went to the... They said, well, we'll give you an audition. So I went to the Kroger next door in Frandor, bought one of those 10-cent Dell books, You Too Can Know Weather, read the thing, went in. And I tease all of our weather guys. I said,
and the Kroger in Frandor still there, by the way.
And I worked at the Kroger in Frandor.
I read the thing, and I thought, who's going to argue with you if you say there's a high over Mexico coming into Oklahoma? Who's going to argue with you, right? So I do all that and practice it. So I took the audition. I have no idea whether it was any good. But we didn't have the technology. We had that spinning weather board with metallic numbers on there to put the temperature on. So I took the audition. So he said, okay, well, we'll try it. And I said to him, well, I'm doing this, but what I really want to do is the sports, if there's ever an opening, figuring you might get into some kind of a... Because you had principal and
there was a revolving door there. There was Bruce Allman, then there was Tom Larson, there was Jerry Francisco.
So did you replace Tom Larson?
I replaced Jerry Francisco.
Okay.
who replaced Tom Larson. All would that this happened within a year.
And Tom Larson passed away a year ago, I think at age 84. He was in town, and we missed hooking up with each other. He's the one who encouraged me when I was in college, was doing student radio. He said, I know the guy over here. You ought to come over here and get a job here. Because I knew Tom because he covered Michigan State. I'm just a young guy. You know, it's all in who you know. It's all who you know. So after then when you left, I mean, I don't think you were out of the parking lot when I was over in his office trying to get the sports show. And
I wasn't the first.
So trying to impress him. I'd do the weather, and I'd say, well, you know, this is a true story. I said, we got a warm front, you know, coming into Chicago. It's going to be about 75 there tomorrow. And ironically, the Tigers play the White Sox there tomorrow, so it'll be good. I mean, I tried to put a sports angle into that thing. But the big selling point I had was I came cheap. And I tell that to students today. I always say to young people coming into the business, I say the advantage you have is you don't cost very much. If you go get a veteran for big money because you're luring them out of someplace, like the new athletic director at State, you're luring them out of someplace, well, now you got an investment. But if you don't have much of an investment, you don't have a whole lot of going on if you'd let them go. That's the way broadcasting, you know, kind of is in some ways today.
It's interesting now. I mean, there's a lot more jobs for the young people, but there are a lot more young people looking for the jobs.
Well, so I used to go over to Michigan. They asked me to go to these career days and talk to the students. So 5-6 years ago, I agreed to do it. So I go over there, and there's this big auditorium full of students. And the first question I asked all of them, and they all got their computers out to take notes. I was a little nervous about what to take, because all of these professors and deans are all in there and waiting to hear what I had to. There were other people who spoke too. So I get in there, and the first thing, as I said, I'm going to guess there were 200 of them in this auditorium. I said, how many are you from out of state? So all these hands go up. I mean, half of them were hands going up out of. So now that's out-of-state tuition. So I said, who's here for the farthest away? And they pointed this one kid, and he's from Hawaii. And I said, why are you here? He said, well, this is a really great communication school, which it is. He says, really great communication school. So I took questions and all that. And I'm mad because my angle was longevity, because at that point it was like you're 48 or 49. They wanted to know about how you get in this and stay in this. Your longevity was tremendous too, which you can address in a moment. But after the first year, I told my wife, I said, I can't go back there and do that again and lie to these people. It's an unknown industry. There are not a lot of great opportunity. You know, there are only going to be so many Tom Brokaws. Mm-hmm. There's only going to be so many Walter Cronkites, right? And that was then, and this is now. Look at the network-changing news anchors hand over fist now, because they don't want to have to pay huge salaries to dominant anchors if they can get an audience in another way. So from here, then, how did you get into Major League Broadcasting?
From here, well, my big break actually was leaving Channel 6. I wound up going down to Detroit, worked for a station called WDRQ, got a job doing the University of Detroit basketball team.
Radio.
Traveled with them, came back up here, wound up getting a job at WKAR with Jim Adams, and we did Spartan football.
Full-time.
He did Spartan basketball, and that's when Fred Stabley wanted hockey broadcast, because that was when they opened Bunn Arena. So now they wanted the games both on home and away. Prior, Terry Braverman had done it, but he had done it part-time, and they just did the games from Dem Hall.
So was Braverman still on staff?
No, that's when he left to take over the Ralph Young Fund.
Okay.
I replaced him.
And what year was that?
That was 1974.
Okay, so, I mean, Brock, that's only 50.
Brock is shaking his head. 1974.
That's only 50. That's the year I was born.
That's only 51 years ago.
That's the year I was born, sir.
It was a very good year.
But you know what? It doesn't really seem that far
back.
No,
it doesn't. It takes off.
I would have read. So, Brock, 2 years ago or so, I've been in the parking lot leaving, and Bob pulls in a pickup truck. And I knew immediately that was you. I mean, you're a couple years older than I am, but that's why I had to ask you how old you were, because you don't look like you've changed very much.
That was the last time I drove the pickup truck, pretty much, because I had had it because we had had a place in Michigan and back and forth to Minnesota at the time. So I needed it to carry stuff. Got here, got in East Lansing traffic, and trying to find a parking space with that pickup truck. That was the end of the pickup truck.
So you had what, NHL hockey and Major League Baseball?
I left here to do the Minnesota North Stars.
So you did the North Stars on TV or radio or both?
TV at the time.
On TV at that. And how many seasons did you do that?
I did them 7 years, I think.
Did you like it? You must
have. I loved it. Yeah, and then but you're going back and forth. We had lost the rights. And then finally, one thing led to another, and I wound up doing a talk show for a year and then went out to Boston for 11 years and did the Red Sox back when, remember, you had to pay TV?
So, and that was TV?
That was TV.
And so that was 18 years of NHL. Which one did you like the best?
Depends on when it was. I mean, you like hockey when you're doing hockey. You like baseball when you're doing, you know, baseball. But then at the end in Boston, that's when the games used to take 3 hours and 45. You'd play really quickly through the first six innings. And then all of a sudden, the seventh inning would come. They'd come with out of the bullpen. And it would take friggin' forever for the thing to finally end. And anyway, I was getting a little bit tired of that. Plus, I wanted to go back to Minnesota, and I did. Came back with the incarnation of the Minnesota Wild. So I started with them in 2000.
So Minneapolis, Boston, Minneapolis.
Right.
Where'd you live in Boston?
I lived in Natick to begin with, and then wound up moving up to New Hampshire on Lake Winnipesaukee.
Did you like it on the
east? I loved New England. That's one of the hard parts about bouncing around. You've had the advantage of working one place, which is, to me, would be a tremendous advantage. You do get a little variety doing what I did, going from, you know, Lansing to Minnesota to Boston to Minnesota, but you leave people behind, you leave memories behind. I mean, it's hard.
Okay, so does the name Ryan Field mean anything to you?
Name what?
Ryan Field. Not the football stadium at Northwestern. Ryan Field was an intern at Channel 10. Then he went to Fox 47 when they were doing local news, and he did the sports. One thing led to another, and he ended up with the regional sports networks in Los Angeles, did pretty well out there and had an agent in that. His agent comes to him 8 years ago, whatever, and says, the lead sports anchor job at WABC TV Channel 7 in New York is open. Are you interested? So one thing leads to another. They hired him 7 or 8 years ago. And we have kids. You know, I have a son in New York, so when I'm out there, I watch a little bit, see how he's doing. He's doing fine. So we had him on the air a couple of weeks ago, and I keep in touch with him on some other issues and all that. So he's on the air. So I said, so what's your lifestyle? Now, this is the number one sports anchor job in the largest market in the United States. He has a very small apartment. He doesn't have a car. He takes a subway wherever he has to go. He works, he gets Friday and Saturday off. He works Sunday through Thursday, okay? And everything he does is based around trying to just survive in Manhattan. So I went home and I told my wife, I said, he's the number one guy in the number one market at WABC TV. And if you listen to him describe his lifestyle, does that mean that the key to, and good for him, you got to be talented to do what he did. And he seems happy with that job. How long he'll stay doing it, I don't know. Like I say, he's got no car. Because no matter what they pay, you got to put up with New York and the taxes and everything else that goes on there. And I said to my wife, you know, when people say, would you have done this over differently? And to your point, if you're going to have I never wanted the highest market. I wanted the highest quality of life. That's what I wanted. That's, to me, the biggest advantage here. Well, you were here for a while, but you also were in two good places, too, Minneapolis and Boston.
Yeah, I like both of them very much. I mean, Lansing is obviously wonderful. Like I told you before when I was on the show, the problem is you took all the money. So somebody else has to make a living. But I just told my wife on the way over here, we were driving, I've always said that a major college town is the best place in the world to live because you have got everything that a big city has except the traffic and usually, you know, the other stuff that goes with it.
My brother, my late brother, used to say, he grew up here with me. You know, he went to high school here, but then he went to Indiana University, ended up, you know, and he was here as a general manager at Wallen Hills Country Club, then Birmingham Country Club in Detroit, and then he passed away 21 years ago at age 52. He had a brain tumor. But at any rate, he used to come up here during the fall for one football, and he didn't come up. He said, I'm not coming up for the garbage game. I am coming up for the big, and don't tell me you can't get this handled. You can handle it. And when he would come up here, he would sit. And usually I was doing the games or whatever. He used to say to me, you don't know how good you have it here. Everybody says, well, do you want to get to this city? And I could have gone to WMAQ in Chicago when we first got married, but we decided she liked her teaching job, and this was still pretty good. And he used to say to me, you don't know how good, he's looking out over the campus, and it's a beautiful day, and the stadium's packed, and it's a big-time game. And he used to say, it's just unbelievable what people have here. To your point, you got Michigan, you have two Big Ten schools. You got the other Division I schools around. You have Northern Michigan to go vacation, right? You got the Detroit's an enormous sports town, and there's so much interest in the Detroit teams in the mid-Michigan area, let alone the capital.
Surrounded by water, Lake Michigan, Lake Huron, Lake Superior, the whole
thing. Now, is the gripe that the weather here in the wintertime isn't exact? But
Minnesota.
It can't be worse than Minneapolis or Boston.
No. That lake makes a huge difference.
So what are you doing now?
Now I'm retired. My grandchildren live about, my wife and I live about 30 miles. Everything's based for me on the Mississippi. We live on the Mississippi on the Wisconsin side, a little town called Pepin. 30 miles north of us on the river, on the Red Wing, Minnesota, is where my one son and his wife and the grandchildren live. My other son lives in St. Paul, further up along the Mississippi. Yeah. So we just go back and forth.
And you knew that, what, Brock, it was earlier this year that Terry Braverman passed away.
Yeah, that was one of the last of the Mohegans for me. I loved listening to your show for a lot of different reasons, but I caught up with a lot of the Michigan State people. That's how I learned about Eric Forseth. That's how I learned about Duane Vernon. And one by one, you know, all the old gang have departed. And Braverman was, from where I'm coming from, Braverman was the last one.
And Brock, I miss Perlis.
Oh, he was Tim.
I miss Perlis. When George was the coach here, you know, I told him, I said, you know, if you just listen to me and throw it more than two times a game, if you just do that, you realize you go down. But George took it well. He took it well. George has some things he would have done over differently. You know, he sued the university, and he had some issues with that, and then he had the issue over the athletic directorship and the football coach at the same time. But at heart, he had great friends.
Oh, he was great.
I've never seen anybody with so many players that loved the guy. And when we had him on the tailgate shows, what I loved about that was all the people would come by and say hi to him during the show that otherwise we would never see.
Yeah, he's like me. He is from Detroit. I did his coaches show. I did it, though. I remember most about George and doing the coaches show, I did a show, which we did on Channel 47 here in Lansing, was where it started from. I did it after a Michigan game where they got shut out like 31 or 35 to nothing, and it poured the entire day. I just dreaded going in on Sunday morning, and I figured George is going to come in. Yeah. God knows what he's going to be like. He was fine.
Well, you know, so if you're around here long enough, I mean, he's not the only one. I mean, I very much miss Ron Mason. I very much
Daryl Rogers.
Daryl would call you up on Saturday morning in the summertime, wondering if you'd go play golf with him. Can you imagine that today? I mean, I missed Judd tremendously, and not that those guys didn't get on my case. You know, but you know, it's like anything else in life. You miss them the most when they're gone.
Yeah, the difference. I mean, you know, looking at Brock. Remember the Monday morning. Monday noontime press conference dealt with Duffy Doherty. It was it was over by the student bookstore, and like Duffy would go through the line to get his lunch.
He'd go
with
through,
everybody else.
I mean, there were, you know, four, five of us in the media, Stapley, Vista, and Duffy, and we just sat there informally and just shot the breeze. You know, Duffy'd eat his lunch right there. This is like, you know, today. And today, my middle son worked 6 years in sports information at Purdue. And they thought they were very good. They don't have quite the same setup culturally as Michigan State does. But when we, you know, when we went through Stabley and Vista, it was everything you could possibly do to make the media want to come recover Michigan State. They never criticized what was written or said. Now, they didn't have as many social media or anything like that then. But our whole bit, there were like six of us in the department, a couple students. You do whatever you have to do to make the media want to come to Michigan State.
Including a free turkey dinner for the football games.
That's changed.
Yes, I know it has. The hot dogs in the press box used to be free.
Today,
you couldn't deal with that now, Tim.
Today, you can't do this, don't do that, don't do this, don't do that. Lynn Henning was on the other day telling us, you know, he's covering Major League Baseball and that. And like he says, some of the things that, from that to covering the minor leagues are all the things that you can't get access to anymore that you used to have access to.
Oh, it's unreal. I was thinking last night with the final hockey game going, with you should see the broadcast booth at Rogers Place in Edmonton. There are clouds below you. I mean, you're trying to identify players. I mean, that's their big thing now. Like when I first did the NHL at the Olympia and all the old stadiums, you were hanging right over the top of the ice. As they built these new ones, every year you move further and further and further and higher and higher and higher. Higher doesn't bother you so much as further. When you get too far away from one, you know, from the far boards, you can't read the numbers.
And so you would have covered Gretzky, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's pretty good. And he was on last night on the studio show.
He scored one time. We played, we being the Minnesota North Stars, played Gretzky in the semifinals in the 80s, and I think he had like 10 points. I mean, we got beat like 11-4 or something. I mean, I don't know what the score was, but Gretzky had one of those nights. 8 points, 10 points, whatever it was.
Golfers, they call it the gem of mid-Michigan golf. It's had that moniker for years and years and well-deserved. And we're talking about the Emerald, just 7 miles north of downtown St. John's on 127. Golfers from all over the state of Michigan have loved the Emerald. And for any special occasion, any time of the year, your hosts Jay and Katie Eckleton can make it a special occasion for you. Whether you're practicing on the driving range, hosting an outing, or just playing with family and friends, the Emerald, remember, the gem of mid-Michigan golf. Farm Bureau Insurance of Michigan, dedicated to serving this state and only Michigan, founded in 1949 by Michigan farmers, members of Michigan Farm Bureau, who wanted an insurance company that worked as hard as they did, gave honest service, cared about Michigan's future. More than 800 associates to serve you, nearly 450 agents over all regions of Michigan, prepared to protect you from the risks of everyday life. Check out the ratings, and you'll find that you always win with Farm Bureau Insurance of Michigan. Coral Gables, one of the area's most iconic restaurants, more than 90 years young. Grand River Avenue, just east of the MSU campus. A popular family restaurant offering homemade specials, friendly service, quality food, and banquet rooms at moderate prices for any occasion. Dine in or carry out. The number is 337-1311. And fish fries on Friday nights. Stu Vanis, the owner, proud to host you at Coral Gables for any occasion, big or small. It's been one of the great restaurants in our area for years.
Dreaming of a fun and affordable vacation getaway? Breeze Airways can take you there. Breeze is expanding its direct destinations from Lansing to sunny Florida, now flying nonstop to Tampa, in addition to Orlando and Fort Myers. With Breeze Airways, you can fly straight from Lansing's Capital Region International Airport to three of Florida's hottest vacation spots, Tampa, Orlando, and Fort Myers. What are you waiting for? Go to www.flybreeze.com or download the Breeze app to book your trip. Breeze Airways offers flexible and friendly policies so that you can always travel with peace of mind. Come and see why Breeze was awarded the 2024 Apex Award for Best Seat Comfort in North America. With Breeze, traveling from Lansing Airport has never been easier. Breeze Airways, seriously nice. In partnership with Lansing's Capital Region International Airport, flying Lansing. With affordable parking close to the terminal and short security lines, it's just plain easy.
From Mud Ice Arena to Little Caesars Arena, we've got the sports opinions that matter to you. From the Driven Collision Studios, we make friends by accident. On the game, 7:30 a.m.
Say good morning. He's got a few minutes, I hope, to the host of Michigan Golf Live, both radio and television. You hear his radio show here every, Saturday morning.
Saturday morning, 7 to 9 a.m., yes.
And Bill Hobson, who's a busy guy, especially at this time of the year, is on the other end of our line. Morning, Bill. Short notice. Appreciate it. Just want to get a couple things caught up with you. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, always good to talk with you. And what a week this is with both the Rocket Classic and the Dow Championship. Somebody's got to get with these schedule makers and let them know it's okay to spread things out a little bit. But, yeah, this is one of those weeks where we're flying around a bit.
Yeah, absolutely. So will you be anchoring in anything, in any way, from the Detroit Golf Club this week?
Yes, we'll be doing the majority of the radio show from there with elements coming from the Dow and trying to do our best to give everybody a good feel for both sides of it. It's such a feather in the cap of this state to have this many events. I don't know why they all have to be in June, but for those who are keeping score at home, Tim, there have been three Epson Tour events. That's the ladies' developmental tour. There has been the Michigan Am, which just concluded at Belvedere over the weekend. And now we had the Meyer event, the LPGA event in Grand Rapids on Father's Day weekend. And now this week, we have both the PGA Tour and the LPGA team event in Michigan. And so June has just been an epic month for golf fans. And this will largely wrap up the big-time tournament season, but obviously we're still in the heart of golf season for all of us.
So you were at the Michigan Amateur. That was historic Belvedere's 100th anniversary, the 41st time they hosted it. And I remember in the former years, they used to have nearby Antrim Dells involved. You played 18 at Belvedere, 18 at Antrim Dells, so they could get everybody around. But somehow, with all the weather issues they had, they must have worked it out. They could get them all around, and even though weather was an issue for much of the week, they got to where they played the championship match at 5 o'clock on Saturday. Caleb Bond of Williamston won it. Did Belvedere survive and get through all of it okay, or was it really, really struggle?
Boy, what an effort from everybody up there, including the Golf Association of Michigan tournament teams. There were times, Tim, on, boy, my days are running together, on Thursday, when they were on one part of the course completing the match play round of 64, and another part of the course, they were already in the round of 32, and at the very tail end of that, they had sent out some competitors in the round of 16, all at the same time because of the cancer or the postponements and the weather delays. I don't know how they kept track of all of it. I was out there trying to figure out what match I was watching for a while. But in the end, they were able to get it all done all on Saturday and had a great champion and had a great match. PJ Maybank and Bond put on quite a show, and it came all the way down to the final green. So, you know, it's really all you can ask for is to have some of your better rated players. And these days, of course, it's a college player's kind of a world. Even if some of the old guys might make it to the 32 or the 16, after a while, it seems like the young talent rises to the top, and that's what happened.
Yeah, so Caleb Bond, he was on yesterday from Williamston, and I told him, I said, I played Belvedere 9 million times, and I said I was sitting on the deck Saturday on my phone watching this on the phone, you know, they get punched into the GAM website.
Oh, yeah, the live scoring.
And
yeah.
So I saw it was even after 17, and I bet my neighbor, I said, the winner is coming on 18. Somebody's going to make a par and win it, because that 18th hole, that par four there, is one of the most brutal par fours in a variety of ways. He laughed because he did manage to get on and two-putt that thing. And if you've ever seen the 18th green at Belvedere, there's 9 million undulations in it. I guess what, Maybank, he three-putted that for bogey, and that was it. You saw that? Is that what I hear?
Yeah, and there was also a big turn of events on the 16th, which is that diabolical uphill par four, where if you come up the least bit short, you're in a big world of hurt. And as is the case with these two great competitors, they both managed to birdie 16, one of them in spectacular fashion, the other one a little more traditional. And, you know, that's one of my favorite things about match play is just the seismic swing in momentum and the emotions that comes through all of that. Both of these guys, you know, Bond, of course, from Michigan State, and Maybank plays at Oklahoma. These are just two great players from the state of Michigan, and I don't think they'll be amateurs for a long time, but they surely did the amateur world of golf very proud with the way that they got after it. And the tournament, you know, the Michigan Am, one of my dreams, Tim, would be to find a way to televise the final match. I don't have that figured out, but it would be really cool just to give the proper credit to the Golf Association and to these players. And we may work on some live stream ideas for next year when they're at Eagle Eye, but Belvedere could not have been a better venue for all of it. And the history is just so rich there, as you said, their 100th anniversary, and Marty Joy and the group there do a phenomenal job.
Right. So where has the TV show been so far this season that left a positive impression on you?
Well, you know, we've had some really cool opportunities to explore some fresh ideas. We've gone to some places that we... for instance, The Rock at Drummond Island. Kind of fun to see that making a comeback. Doing golf in and around the Grayling area. And St. John's Resort in Plymouth, which is absolutely beautiful. That's where the Cardinal is. That's where LIV Golf is having its tour championship in August. I've been recommending people to go over to the west northwest side to Manistee National and take in that new short course, which I think is phenomenal. Pilgrim's Run, just north of Grand Rapids, is in my top five public courses in the state. I think it's absolutely incredible over there. And, you know, this journey of ours continues. We did something. We just finished shooting it. It'll air in 2 weeks. We embedded our TV crew all 3 weeks of the Epson Tour's journey throughout Michigan. The Epson Tour started in Battle Creek, then it went to Boyne, and over the weekend we were up in the Upper Peninsula in Escanaba, going back and forth to Charlevoix. And we want people to get a feel for what life is like on that tour of dreamers, these young ladies who are dreaming of the opportunity to make a living on the LPGA Tour. I cannot wait to present that show. As we got to know some of the players, we took them off the course to, you know, to do unique things that explore the areas where these tournaments are. And, you know, these are the Nelly Cordas of tomorrow. In fact, she was on that tour. So was Brooke Henderson. So was Lilia Vu. So was Lydia Ko. All of these names you hear of now spent time on the Epson Tour, and it's been just a very cool thing for us to be able to just kind of scratch the surface of those stories, and we'll be presenting that on our TV show in just a couple weeks.
All right, Michigan Golf Live's Bill Hobson is with us. Brock is telling me, he says he interviewed a Live executive recently for his radio show, which he heard. Tell us about that.
Yeah, I was asked by WJR in Detroit to fill in on a day when the Detroit Economic Club was welcoming the CEO of LIV Golf, Scott O'Neill, to address the DEC. I did make sure that everybody inviting me was well aware of my stance on LIV Golf, which is not favorable. And he was the first guest. I only had him for about 10 minutes. I would have loved to have an hour, because that would allow you time to cut through the staple answers that he's already got memorized. But it was very interesting. I think probably I have the podcast up on our website if anybody wants to hear it. I think my biggest surprise was when I asked him if he had any concerns about the source of the funding of the organization for which he works. His answer started with, "I really don't know." And I thought that was kind of strange. And it kind of was strange throughout. So I'm glad for the opportunity, and I would love to have more time with him. He didn't exactly commit to that by the time we were done.
So you're at the Rocket Classic this week, and the Detroit newspapers a couple of weeks ago, they had a story in which one of the top people at Rocket Mortgage says, you know, our contract with the PGA Tour expires after next year, and then, quote unquote, we have decisions to make moving forward. What do you make of that?
Well, the tour, and thankfully there's a new boss coming into the tour, it's about time, the tour needs to treat this event better. They need to treat it better with dates, with incentives, with points. Remember, all these tournaments are weighted in some way, shape, or form to be more valuable or less valuable when it comes to that FedEx Cup pursuit, when it comes to Ryder Cup points. And here is, you know, Rocket or Quicken, however you want to call Dan Gilbert's company. They are a massive sponsor of the PGA Tour. And yet they get treated as if they are the John Deere Classic when it comes to importance of the tournament. That's got to change. Thankfully, as we get down here near the end of all of this, as we get closer to tournament week, and last week was the deadline, the quality of the field improved at the last minute, which is really good, largely because players are now starting to see that they need to put in a good effort to earn some more points, to climb the Ryder Cup points list. It doesn't hurt that Captain Keegan Bradley has committed to play in the Rocket Classic. And so players always want to catch the eye of the captain. And that's one of the things that is happening with some late additions to it. And we may be seeing a playing captain for the first time in a generation. So kudos to Keegan for all of that. But I think that's what it means. Tim, the tour is asking its sponsors for increasingly large amounts of money, and they're going to have to do something to incentivize that investment. And right now, that's going to land on the desk of the incoming commissioner or CEO or whatever title they want to give him. Thankfully, Monahan is on his way out, although it's taking 18 months somehow for him to say farewell. This tour needs new leadership, and hopefully the new guy will bring that.
Why do you say, thankfully, Monahan is on his way out?
He completely mangled every bit of the whole LIV debacle. He lied to his players. I have no idea why they allowed him to continue as the commissioner, since he works for them. And there is zero support for Jay Monahan amongst the players. I'm not sure they realize the power they have as his employers. In many ways, it's kind of like how the NFL owners employ Roger Goodell. Well, they like him, so they keep him around. They keep giving him more money. The PGA Tour players are not happy. Livid would be one of the gentler descriptions we've heard about their relationship with Monahan. And so now, however it worked behind the scenes, and I don't know, but I did notice that in the press photos introducing the new CEO, he was surrounded by Tiger and Rory, and you did not see Mr. Monahan as part of that. So I don't know. Maybe I'm overreading what I'm seeing in visuals, but the tour needs new leadership, and it's finally going to get that.
One other thing, and I'll let you go, Bill. You talk about the Rocket needs better dates. What would be the optimum date that Rocket would want to maximize the popularity that it desires?
Yeah, that's a good question, and it's a tough one, because right now they have this position which is in between the U.S. Open and the Open Championship, right? So sadly, there's only one major left on the calendar, and some players like to play the U.S. Open, take a week off, get in another tournament, take a week off before they go overseas. Others go overseas a couple weeks ahead of time to adjust to all of that. I really think that if you could get it outside of that window between the U.S. Open and the Open Championship, probably stand a better chance. The further you can push it, especially in a Ryder Cup year, the further you can push it to a last opportunity to get Ryder Cup points position, you probably draw a stronger field. But you can make an argument in a lot of different directions. For the players who have locked up their spots, maybe they're not going to come and play it. All I know is, Tim, it's a great tournament, and Rocket deserves better love from the tour than it has been getting.
You're not sure your knees can handle 18 holes, but I am.
You can't imagine a morning without pain, but I can.
You've never heard anybody make that sound, but I have.
I'm Dr. Michael Shingles.
Dr. Arjuna Cuddyback.
Dr. Andrew Skorfar.
We've seen it all.
And now you can see us here at University of Michigan Health Sparrow.
Mid-Michigan's nationally recognized orthopedics and sports medicine center.
Learn more and find a highly skilled specialist at ufmhealthsparrow.org/orthopedics.
You need a family physician at any time for any issue. You want Lansing's veteran Dr. Thomas Jameson, who has faithfully served thousands of mid-Michigan families for more than 50 years. He's a member of the CIMA team now, Capital Internal Medicine Associates. His office phone, 374-7600, and his office at 3955 Patient Care Drive. Dr. Jameson has helped so many people in so many ways. He gives physicals to athletes at the same time. Dr. Thomas Jameson for you.
Apply today to become a school bus driver or bus attendant with Dean Transportation this summer. Dean is seeking compassionate people to join their family-led business. Dean is now hiring for multiple roles throughout the area that offer paid training, weekday and flexible hours, school breaks off, and most important, an opportunity to make a difference in your community. Learn more and apply at deanjobs.com. That's deanjobs.com.
It's one of Michigan's great entrepreneur success stories, Desmond Ferguson's Moneyball Sportswear. Moneyball, the only way to ball. Uniforms, team shop, and casual trendy apparel for everyone. Opens 10 a.m. each day. Questions, call 393-0763. A great location, 927 West Saginaw Street in Lansing, and one in Southfield on Southfield Road. The online reviews say it all. Great selections and staff, all high quality. In Lansing, Moneyball is truly the only way to ball. There's hardly an off day in any way for family entertainment at Royal Scott Golf and Bowl just west of the Lansing Airport. Amy Denstedt says, come on by for so many different activities. Yes, 27 holes of golf, but how about the car cruising parties all summer long in the parking lots on Friday with food trucks and live music? They have pinball leagues for you to enjoy. Nobody's got the pinball machines like Royal Scott. Trivia Mondays for one and all. 321-6071 for any special occasion. Royal Scott Golf and Bowl.
If you want sports, you're in the right place. If you want easy listening, it's not here, buddy. We're the game, 7:30 a.m.
Let's see. We bothered Lynn Henning of the Detroit News when he was in Spain. Now we're bothering him when he's in Colorado. I mean, why would we think to go ahead and give him a day off or something when he's just back home normally covering baseball for the Detroit News? Nonetheless, because he's a good guy, Lynn is on the other end of our line. Like, is just this another vacation for you in the Colorado area? Because you've been to Colorado before, have you not?
Yeah, there's a reason for that. Stepson Wesley lives out here, Tim, and he is in Munich as we speak, and then is on his way to Sicily for a wedding. Tough life. And his dog is our grand dog, as we call her. Her name is Georgia. She's a Tibetan Terrier. And we come out here and spend a week with her, or in the case of last year, we went on tour for a couple of weeks and took her with us. She's that kind of a special friend to us. And it's really a treat. And anytime, Tim, as you know, you get out to Colorado in summer, let alone the other seasons of the year, it's really terrific. And it's just so refreshing to be up here in this cool alpine air. And it's just a lot of fun to spend a week out here in this glory.
So toward that end, a couple of years ago, for the first time in ages, we were there and we got to spend, a friend of ours was the pro at Broadmoor in Colorado Springs. Yeah. I got to tell you, Lynn, that's as good a resort as I've said. That's as good a resort. And so the funny part of that, when we were there, it was in the summertime. Mark Kilbell is a pro out there. He says, see those four guys right there? Those are the coaches for the Colorado Rockies. We let them play when they have a day off. So they come in. So everybody says, hey, yeah, you guys want some tickets for tomorrow night? So, hey, sure. So you ought to see where the Colorado Rockies put us. And they were playing the Miami Marlins. And that's the first time I'd been to Coors Field. So every time I see the Rockies getting beat up again somewhere, somehow this season, and I think, you know, it's such a shame for those fans out there because Coors Field is gorgeous.
It is. And it's just one of the delights out here. And you just cited one, Broadmoor, which, by the way, Sea Island, where I played and where you played when you were down visiting a couple of years ago, is owned by the same people, same gentleman. And then, of course, you know what I did last year I'd never done before is I went over to the Air Force Academy and toured that for a day.
Yep.
Isn't that something?
It's fantastic.
And, and it's just an example of what you have in Colorado. You can go any direction and have a terrific time. And it's just a real treat to be out here during this summer break.
Yeah, absolutely. So your name came up earlier because somehow, some way, Comerica Park came up. And I was mumbling. and I was mumbling. I said, you know, when I'm there, I said, is it just me because I'm getting older? Or does anybody else have trouble following the flight of the ball off the bat, which I never had a problem in Tiger Stadium. So sooner or later, guys say, yeah, I have trouble. So we were talking amongst ourselves, and no one's on the staff at Channel 10, and I said, if you want to hear somebody talk about Comerica Park, ask Lynn Henning, because Lynn thought when Tiger Stadium went down, this is now, 25 years of Comerica Park. What I could not answer was the main criticism you have of that stadium that I couldn't remember.
It's many, but it begins with the outlandish distances that they've twice tried to fix and really have never really sufficiently attacked. But it's not only that, Tim. They took the absolute opposite of Tiger Stadium and turned it into Comerica Park. Instead of intimacy, you got this swept back distance from everything. They took the upper decks. And remember how the upper decks, you just never really had a bad seat in the upper deck, particularly if you were down lower. You were right over the field. Well, instead, they swept them all back at Comerica Park. They took the seats around the infield, not only not covered them, which leads to a lobster broil during the hot months, but on top of that, Tim, they put in low gradation. If you're sitting behind anybody who's above 5 feet 5, you've got the head in your face. And I'll tell you, it just absolutely was done upside down from what Tiger Stadium was. And it was a stadium design I saw coming. I was writing and asking them to reconfigure 2 years in advance when I saw what they were doing. And it met with deaf ears, not that I was ever going to have that kind of influence, but you could foresee it, Tim, so clearly that they were turning this thing into a monstrosity. Now, remember, it was 2003 when they decided to bring in the left field seats. Well, right now, all those home runs that go into the bullpen, that was field and play there. And remember, too, the bullpens used to be in right field, where those home runs that now descend into the right field seats, those were the bullpens. They just completely turned this thing on its ear, and I will never forgive them for what they did to a ballpark when they had such a classic example of how to make ballpark intimacy the real deal. They also had it, Tim, because they'd done it already in Baltimore and in Cleveland, and they completely ignored the genius to those new ballparks when they built Comerica Park.
Yeah. Owen wants to ask you a question.
Where does Comerica Park rank among the, I guess, 30 ballparks?
And toward that end, Lynn, which is the greatest stadium, for whatever it's worth, whatever criteria you use, that you think this is Major League Baseball at its best with this stadium?
My favorite still is Camden Yards in Baltimore. And it always will be, for all the reasons cited. Now, you've got a great one in San Francisco. I like Cleveland, Tim. I think
Cleveland's great.
It used to be Jacobs Field. Yeah.
Great.
Those examples existed. Those ballparks were in play. Pittsburgh is phenomenal. PNC. They had so much to work with, Tim, at that point, and completely bypassed it. They went about it because they got a bad questionnaire out to the fans. Fans said, well, we want to sit in the sun. They think they want to sit in the sun in April and May. They're forgetting what it would be like in June and July and August without an upper deck over them. And that's where they blew it, too. Those people now cook and roast down there. And the worst part is they left everything so far away from the actual diamond. Look at all the foul territory there. Look at another monstrosity, the dugouts. Those dugouts, and why they haven't chopped those down and put premium seating in there, I'll never know. Those dugouts are twice what you need. But if it was to be done wrong, it was done at Comerica Park. People forget because they've made a few smart improvements, of course, necessary ones, particularly in left field. But they haven't gone far enough, and in some respects, they never will be able to until we get a new ballpark in town, and I can't wait for it.
So where does it rank then for...
Oh, Owen, I put it 30th. How's that?
Wow.
See, you're undecided there, Lynn. Man.
Well, I mean, to your point, I mean, I have sat there behind the first base dugout and just broiled like on the S. I have done that. And
did
I was
you put sunscreen on?
No, but I was there for Cabrera's last game, and I was in a suite.
Yeah.
But
and it was warm that day.
Yeah. Well, but the problem I had was seeing the ball off the bat. Tiger Stadium, I never had that problem. Now, look, I get the Tiger Stadium had to be replaced. I'm with Lynn. Camden Yards is great. Not only that, there's plenty of parking there, and it isn't overwhelmingly expensive. At least when I was there, I could sit on the infield for about $30.
Lynn, what do you think about Camden Yards now that they moved back the left field fence and everything?
Of course, where they ruined it was when they brought those fences back. I mean, they had proper intimacy there. So they took them back and then predictably realized their ways and then brought them back again, which tells you just leave intimacy alone in any ballpark, Owen, and you've got the first commandment of baseball construction to a ballpark nailed, intimacy. And that's what Tiger Stadium was built on. I remember Kaline used to tell me, he said when he was in the on-deck circle, he could listen to just casual conversations in the first seat between fans sitting there. He said it was uncanny. He said, because you're 10 feet away. I remember the first game I went to in 1962, for some reason in September, we got seats right in the front row next to the Yankees dugout. Mickey Mantle is literally no more than 10 feet from me standing in the on-deck circle. Well, that's what Tiger Stadium was all about. It brought you so close to the skin and the blood and the flesh of a baseball game. And what they do at Comerica Park? Built the exact opposite. The one thing that they did do intelligently, and I will forever credit them in half, is the venue itself, the locale. Putting it down there in the heart of town was the best decision imaginable. They have that outgrowth of bars and restaurants, as Tim says. That is a destination venue. That's why they've drawn 3 million fans four times and never even got beyond 2 million much, except for a couple of times at Tiger Stadium. So that was wise, but the ballpark itself was simply done in a cockeyed manner, and we've had to pay a price here inordinately for a long time.
Well, Lynn, how do you feel about the netting, like going all the way down the line and everything?
It's been wise, and Owen, you can see how fast people have adapted to that. And it has saved a lot of injuries.
Yep.
I mean, we were waiting for the worst to happen, and it would have happened eventually. But that has become now a virtual non-factor. Everybody's adjusted to it. They certainly have benefited because those foul balls were whistling there at 100 miles an hour plus, and people's lives literally were in danger. A lot of injuries have been avoided from that, thankfully.
All right. Now, we thought about you this week, and Brock will read this to you. Your name came up, as I said. I got to add, it's partly, frankly, one of the reasons that we called for today was because of the quote, which I thought was incredible, from Tarek Skubal to your newspaper.
Yeah, to your colleague, Chris McCoskey. I'm sure you're aware of this is Tarek Skubal yesterday or on Monday. Quote, "It has nothing to do with me not wanting to be here. I hope that's clear. But there is a business side of this game that is not as beautiful as the baseball side of this game. That's just what it is." End of quote. That's from Tarek Skubal to your colleague, Chris McCoskey at the Detroit News.
Lynn, what do you react to all that? What do you read into that? Because when I saw that, I thought he is long gone, as Ernie used to say.
Distilled truth. And that's said as concisely as anyone could have said it, what Tarek Skubal just said. There's a business side to this and there's a baseball side. And he is going to follow the business side necessarily out of a sense of principle at the end of next season. Now, the Tigers are not to be faulted here because, well, they could just offer him a check and get him to extend. No. They're not interested in extending guys, and that is not sufficiently appreciated. They know that whatever figure today they would ask for an extension is likely to be surpassed once Tarek Skubal hits the free market in 17 months or so. And that is what Boris and Skubal are both banking on. They're not worried about injury. He's a young man. His arm has been great. Sure, we all know the chances. They know the percentages, but they also know the percentages of getting $400 million or even more. And again, a year and a half. So this is not something that the Tiger could simply do by saying, hey, let's extend. That's not going to happen because Boris and Skubal are not interested in it.
So the game tonight with Oakland, with the A's tonight, that's game 81, 81 down, 81 to go. Do you have a thought on the next 81 games coming up?
Yeah, they have an incredible lead, and we never would have imagined this, guys, that they'd be, what, 9.5 up at this point, and particularly with the people they have lost. You'd be looking at a team, you'd say they'll be lucky to be 500. But they figure out a way to do it, and they're going to have two specific needs here as we get into the five-week mark before the trade deadline. And that is bullpen help. They will get bullpen help for sure. It'll be one, maybe two pitchers for sure. They will continue to seek that right-handed hitting left side infielder. And if the Diamondbacks decide, as I think they will, that they're not going to make a go for it this year, Corbin Carroll's now out, they will put Eugenio Suarez on the market, and the Tigers will probably go after him as hard as a team can. The Tigers have some trade chips for sure. They've got adequate minor leaguers to package. And I think they can pull off multiple deals for sure as we look at that bullpen and as their needs for a right-hand hitter. Bullpen's going to be easier to get, more fundamental to get than that right side or that left side right-handed hitter. But they can conceivably get both. And those are the two things I would say are all but guaranteed to be their priorities. Starting pitching, there isn't enough of it. It'll be overly expensive. And they also know this. They can win this division, and you only need three pitchers when you get to the playoffs, three starters. And they'll have those three starters. So I don't view that as much a priority as relief pitching and as, again, the thunder bat for the left side.
So before I let you go, you wrote about Kevin McGonigal. When West Michigan, their affiliate, was in here, I went and watched them twice. And frankly, it's a star system. I went to see these two guys. I went to see Clark and McGonigal. The problem with Clark is when I saw him, he walked all the time. He hit a couple of balls. But I'm telling you, Lynn, this McGonigal, I'm telling you, I know one thing for sure. He can hit Class A pitching. That he can do. And his average was up on the video boards. And I can't tell you how many years of watching the Lugnuts where the video board batting average is a guy's hitting 205, 210, 215, 220, whatever. And he's at like 434. And he hits the first pitch and he just rips it like a rocket. And Fred interviewed both him and Clark. He says both those guys couldn't be nicer, both of them. They're affable. They have personalities. And then you wrote them. My question is, why aren't those guys at Erie right now? Why are they still at West Michigan?
Well, that's the question we're all asking, and I've been writing about it for a couple of weeks now. And the answer, and to get to this one directly, is they probably will go, certainly McGonigal, in the next couple of weeks at the latest. I'm surprised he isn't there right now because he's overmatched pitching there. Clark, they're going to take a little more time on, conceivably. But he's homered now in back-to-back games. You're right, Tim. He does take a lot of walks, but that's because his strike zone judgment is so very good. And that is going to be one of his best friends throughout his career. But I wrote, Tim, a couple of weeks ago, Kevin McGonigal has a very good chance to go to spring training next February, March, and win the Tigers' starting shortstop job on opening day. His bat-to-ball skills are the best this organization has seen from a 20-year-old since a guy named Kaline was in this organization. What you saw is exactly right in what they know. Bat-to-ball, they have not seen a prospect like this since Kaline.
I mean, he swings right away, and they're just, we went 4-for-5 one night, and he went 5-for-5. I said, you might want to pitch around this guy.
And Lynn, you should have seen the crowds in Lansing when
Huge.
West Michigan were here.
Huge.
It was just jammed. People coming up from Detroit to see the Tigers prospect, and of course, people drove down from Grand Rapids because West Michigan's only an hour away.
I'm telling you, he hit one into right field. I swear to heaven, the ball didn't go 20 feet off the ground, and it was still going up when it went out. I mean, this guy's got a live bat. And then I read your story and I thought, you know what, they need stars, and that kid to me, and he's a very nice kid. Fred interviewed him in that
Clark. He's terrific.
They're both nice kids too, so good for them.
Oh, excellent.
So hey,
well, there's a third one too, Tim, real fast, and that's Josue Brasino, the catcher, first baseman, and he's got a left-handed bat, and he might be the most dynamic of the three in terms of power for sure. So get ready. They've got a trio there that they have not seen in this system in many, many, many a moon.
Need a break from work? Tune in to the game 7:30 a.m. and pretend you're analyzing the play. We won't tell. Lansing's home for sports you actually care about. WVFN. East Lansing, a Town Square media station.
To left, and that one's gone.
The game 7:30 a.m.